interrupting the current neo-Euchronial, climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 587. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed because you don't know what you missed until you get behind the woodshed. It takes you being involved with all that. An update here coming on this global incapacitation of the internet that we had here just last week or so, the CrowdStrike event. Now we hear of insider trading. It seems to be an ongoing theme. You heard of 9/11 and everything else. You start to have to think about how this place is really, really wired. What your part about in it is. The CrowdStrike executive sells $1.49 million in stock. The CrowdStrike Holdings Incorporated reported that its chief security officer, Sean Henry, sold 4,000 shares of the company's Class A common stock on July 15th, according to a recent filing with the Securities Exchange Commission. The stock was sold at a price of $371.32 per share, totaling approximately $1.4 $9 million. The transaction was executed under a prearranged 10b5-1 trading plan, which allows company insiders to set up a predetermined schedule for buying or selling shares at a time when they are not in possession of a material non-public information. This ensures that the insider is not trading on insider information, adhering to the regulations set by the SEC. So how far in advance did they know of a planned global outage that they could write that up? I note that the article is said to be written also here, to look at the bottom, by AI assistance and reviewed by a human animal, I suppose. I bring this up because I noticed these AI-assisted or written pieces appear to include quite a lot of additional information, which also appears apologetic or conciliatory, excusing, dismissive of any potential for concern for abuse, notwithstanding any legal protections. In other words, these AI assisting techniques and tools do something. They tow a narrative of an unknown special interest. I'd like you to read for that. There's a couple of places you can see that. The technique is, quote, the sale took place amidst a broader context of the market, that trying to bring a plausible diffusion, which can act as cover, that didn't really need to be added to the story. And then as it moves on to, quote, in other recent news, CrowdStrike Holdings has been making headlines with its robust financial performance and significant developments. That's almost sounding like a promotion on top of it. This tends to provide the impression that since the stock is perceived to be going higher, the sale by the insider CEO wasn't of a motive to be questioned as well. And these are very interesting and subtle perception management techniques that are built into these. So I'm taking note of this, and the AI assisting is very good at doing that. And we're going to be hard-pressed to start to be able to cut through this. It actually puts more demand on us to really know what we believe we know, and with a foundation. Well, I've been telling you, support your work, support your understanding. Don't just take it off the internet unsupported without any foundation. And when you go look for the foundation and support, make sure it's good quality stuff as well. If anybody writing something, put it somewhere, and then quoting it some other statement. I don't know how many times I've seen people write up things and legal briefs and everything. We just heard even the lawyers doing AI. They just make up stuff. When you go read the case, the quote's not even in the case. You read the source, it's not even there. It's just put slapped together. This is before AI. So I can only imagine where it's going to go. So we're going to need to protect ourselves, even just for ourselves, just so that we think we know something, that it is more true than that. And here reading some follow-up information also, as I was going through, looking for tie-ins to the information that I've been giving here through the weeks on these claims that were made on the Trump assassination. I've had an additional consideration to add, and it's kind of an interesting layering. As I was discussing here through Occam, for the motive of crooks last week, that hasn't been disproved yet, to my knowledge. In fact, I'm still seeing that the FBI is saying they don't know. And as I said, unless there's a better proof than and no evidence, then I think I'm correct. And I'm going to hold to that. But reading this week, I found some more interesting things to layer on top of the noise that seems to come on, to make pointing out different things and that people might be find fantastic in all this to track down, but we still want to keep a level head about it all. So I want to expand on that theory that of why crooks, what the crooks' motive was, and through this revelation promo to incorporate multiple shooters here, the problem with the multiple shooters missing Trump, and most importantly, why it could be just as useful if the patsy crooks did miss. It might even point to the chosen culprit. So in utilizing this multiple shooter and the problems, they missed. But looking at it nonetheless, and looking at what I was saying last week, was saying that there would have been an impression that would have been made on Trump. And so now I'll add that now. And I think you'll see these fact points start to, well, they don't disprove it. And that's the whole interesting part about it. Even the point that they missed, Tom McDonald dropped a brand new song 24 hours right after the attempt on Trump's life called They Missed. And I find that interesting as well. And that's quite a talented guy. I'm not much into rap, but he has a different method of approach that it's kind of hard to deny him. What he does and how comprehensive it is he's talking. But here we read exclusive. Secret Service ramped up security after intel of Iran plot to assassinate Trump. No known connection to the shooting. So just as I was saying last week, this is pretty integrating fairly well. Iran has repeatedly vowed revenge for the U.S. military's killing of Soleimani. And a former senior Trump administration official who worked on the national security have had tight security since leaving the government. There's no indication that Thomas Matthew Crooks, the would-be assassin who attempted to kill the former president on Saturday, was connected to the plot, the sources said. The existence of the intelligence threat from a hostile foreign intelligence agency and the enhanced security for Trump raises new questions about the security lapses at the Saturday rally in Butler, Pennsylvania, and how a 20-year-old man managed to access a nearby rooftop to fire shots that injured the former president. The U.S. national security official said the Secret Service and Trump campaign were made aware of the threat before Saturday's rally. So despite what we saw was an increased security, Crook still got the shot off. At least a shot. I think we are now seeing, they're claiming at least 8 because of the shells that were found. And he's not known to be part of the supposed reported promoted foreign threat either here. So what if he was the unwitting participant of a domestic plan under foreign influence? All this noise is to divert the attention of the witnesses except one, if he were to live, which Trump did. It didn't matter if the bullet missed. There was a backup intention to the chosen outcome because, in fact, they couldn't leave it to Crooks, as I was questioning last week. And so I'm layering on this idea that there may have been multiple shooters, but they're not the types of shooters that we may be thinking. And that's just to leave a space for them. I'm not necessarily believing anything I'm saying as far as exactly what was out there. I do see that there's a thing going on, and I'd rather be focused on that because it matters more as we move through and don't let the noise persuade us. Here, this Crooks being a patsy, and they couldn't leave that shot to him unless they were making a different type of impression. So I've identified Crooks and his private motive last week, and let us say that was secretly encouraged, because there's other evidence of how did he get a lot of these things like the devices. He was secretly encouraged in his own private motive, as I was speaking last week. and the supposed lapses of security provides Crook's opportunity to take his shot. And he's being encouraged, so he's going to be given the idea on how to get there. And take his shot, coming and going to him as a patsy. And it does. Evidence destroyed. Crooks. So whether Crooks hits or misses doesn't matter. Crooks is a dead man. Either way, the op sniper shooting from wherever guaranteed the elimination of the evidence, which was Crooks himself. And as I mentioned last week, that the problem with many shooters is they missed, as Tom McDonald rapped his song just not 24 hours later on YouTube. Again, such a talent that guy is on what he says. Really found interest in what he brings out. He's a Canadian, and he brings out, you think, he's like talking through the nature of an American, which I find great, because I think, you know, North America, we're all, in a way, we all should be Americans in our desire to be a better place in the world. And we've fallen terribly. So this is the other tragedy. And I think a foreigner sees that and writes better music than I think people in the United States is pretty interesting. But so getting past that and all the integration that happens. And although there's a question, how did he come up with that song so quick? Two. As some in the deep state so-called don't like Trump is inarguable. And he is unpredictable as part of one of their problems with it. He is also repeatedly on record saying he is going to stop all wars and bring peace. That doesn't fit the chosen agenda, but they can impress Trump to pursue their actual object. And the two avenues to the object are, one, to eliminate Trump and any obstruction to war, which is their intention, or two, impress Trump with the idea he is targeted by somebody so that Trump makes the decision to retaliate for the favor of the retaliation, the guy that he is, the street fighter that he tends to want to be. And that's the promoted foreign plan on the attempt of his life from Iran. So what am I proposing in this? If the patsy kills Trump, the deep state, including the Democrats, dodges a bullet. Crooks does not. He's dead. As is Trump, their nemesis on this position. If the patsy misses, Crooks is still dead. The op sniper zips to the ground as the officials focus on the patsy's lifeless body, pleased with their work. Now, I say zips. There was supposed to be a zip line that went from that water tower. And if this ends up coming up, more information coming, this is still within the realm of what was going on. Yeah, there might have been multiple shooters, but they weren't at Trump. The United States Secret Service shared this information with a detailed lead, and the Trump campaign was made aware of the evolving threat. And despite a response to the increased threat, Secret Service surged resources and assets for the protection of the former Trump. All of this being in advance of Saturday, this plants the seed in Trump. The seed is planted in the now bleeding Trump prior to the event through the traumatic, life-altering experience that, but for the grace of God, it seems, providence strikes. It could have been the theocracy of Iran having a long-term plan to kill him. So they plant the seed. It's like hypnosis. They plant the seed, and then there's this attack, and now he gets injured. And that takes that. I said it does something to you. So later then, when Trump is lobbied by his influential air packers to go to war with Iran, he has a personal dog to put in the fight and is better mentally predisposed to go to war with Iran, just as the Zionists have intended with the fully congressionally compromised support that they've been building. And the news backs that up here as we get down this line of reasoning. So maybe they missed, but Trump's trigger is cocked for the war in the alternative, which is really their plan. This is a bigger deal than some kid on a roof. Because those chosen are not so supreme as to make war on their own and survive. They are not so supreme that they do not need help. And Trump is the guy that can give it to them. So So how wise and inspired by Providence is Trump to stop the supreme psychosis to make peace? We might see, won't we? But revisiting what I said, revisiting what I'm saying about what Trump seemed to appear to me as the pro wrestling performance on that day, if you look at the video, which Trump, pro wrestling performance, Trump has participated in the past. I have to ask myself, is kayfabe close enough to kabuki? Kind of sounds like kovefe. Remember that? He's been telling us the entire time what we are watching in this regard. And he, if you look at what he said, and you attach that what the meaning of kayfabe is to the misstatement of kovefe, which is really close in one of the derivations, and you attach it to the media, you'll see that it fits perfectly. So he's been telling us. So after the Keystone Cop antics that I seem to meet, on the stage that day when they came on, that Occam attributed to the lack of adequate communication, we then see later the WWE, WWC, WWF, big Showtime stage entertainment wrestler and master showman Hulk Hogan make an appearance at the RNC convention to declare Trump-a-mania. The Keystone Cops on the assassination stage followed by Hulk Hogan, promoting a tag team match of Orange Man Bad and JD the Destroyer versus, well, we're not sure yet, though Kamala Harris, or Mean Harris, is a miraculous training we're now seeing overnight turnaround with the help of the FLAP, the corporate lame-ass media, right, Grimner? From Word Salad Annie to Overnight Avenger, now endorsed by a political entertainer promoter's Obama in a grudge match for the ages. I would say that you can't make this stuff up, but apparently someone has. Life is but a kovefe, portrayal of staged events, kayfabe, kabuki theater in which we play our part, the patsy crooks of which exit stage left, apparently. So I've integrated to another layer. All the facts will seem to come together there. There's no evidence to the contrary at this point. In this regard, I have no real dog in that fight. I'm just offering there's an alternative, and it is an interesting gameplay to take advantage of the weaknesses of others. And the facts continue to either not be there to prove something or to show that it could have been there. And where the players set and what they end up doing, that is on the one that's driving that wagon. We don't know. And if this is a masterful game set up to impress Trump, they're doing their work because it's coming out. So to drive home the point for Trump, Israel tries to smooth things over with Trump because there's been a disconnect. And we saw that coming this week. Netanyahu's NATO-style anti-Iranian alliance idea would open new Pandora's box in the Middle East. This is coming fast and furious, not that one in Mexico. Fast and furious about how this is being put together and people are doing analyses on all these. Anybody who's looking in is not part of that, doesn't have the psychopath psychosis of genocide, can see these are setups. And they're being masterfully executed, even if Trump wasn't. And that ends up being the point. He ends up being the tool. Israel's prime minister has outlined in the U.S. Knesset Congress, speaking of an ambitious plan for the future of the Middle East security architecture, proposing an anti-Iranian NATO-style security pact dubbed the Abraham Alliance, leading European Middle East policy expert Dr. Marco Cornelos has told Sputnik why the ambitious idea seems unlikely to get off the ground. The new alliance I envision would be a natural extension of the groundbreaking Abraham Accords, Netanyahu said. And there is his connection to get back to Trump's good side. He references the project that Trump's son-in-law made, that he promoted, the Abraham Accords. And this is going to help to alleviate the lack of the lack of loyalty that Trump now sees in Netanyahu, as they need it to get Trump to make the next decisions. And it looks like they're all in that he will be the next president, notwithstanding this grudge match coming with Mean Harris here. Kamala. So this is intended here to smooth over the differences between Trump and Netanyahu. So when the suggestion to go to war with Iran because they are a threat to the U.S., Trump thinks about the associated threat to him in the assassination attempt purportedly planned for him by Iran, which they've already said there's no connection to, or to crooks, which in the layered addition, he's a patsy. And it didn't matter. It didn't matter whether he missed. They were sending the message. They were sending a message. Either Trump was gone or he was going to get the message to fulfill what part they needed him to play. Ensure it a lot better. The Kremlin reacted cautiously to the Israeli leader's proposal. Quote, do we need confrontational mechanisms in the Middle East? It is unlikely, but you need to understand the details of Netanyahu's reasoning before making any conclusions, presidential spokesman Dmitry Peskov said, speaking to reporters after President Putin's talk with Syrian President Bashar Assad on Thursday, as they're now starting to look at what this is going on. And things are getting worse. And yes, I called it Netanyahu. Spokesman Dmitry Peskov did not. Russia knows they're dealing with genocidal maniacs in Iran, with Iran here, going against Iran, and is just another people to commit genocide against in Netanyahu's desire to fulfill a greater Israel from river to the sea, and then beyond. So they've got they're looking askance at this one. They could pretty much see what's happening and coming. And these genocidal chosen psychopaths, supremacists, have no internal off switch. And these people who look at these things know this. That off switch must come from an external mechanism. That's what crooks figured out. Too late. And despite this psychopathy or his kinship with it, Democrats are openly anti-Semitic, we hear from Elon Musk. Again, point after point in connection to what might be coming down and what looks like it is coming down and developing. The billionaire has suggested that the criticism of Israel amounts to an open bigotry against Jews. And I can just tell you, you've heard me criticize this guy. The more he talks, the dumber I think he is, or he's just a player. Just like we know the technopaths have become, as they all look like Trump was going to win, they all jumped on his team already. Israel and the Jews is a fraudulent or false equivalent, is all I can say right here. These terms are mutually exclusive. The terms have no relationship to each other other than to expose the Zionist deception and abuse of using Jews as cover to establish an illegal occupation of the foreign land of Palestine to them. Musk comes out and champions the cause of genocide. The U.S. Democratic Party has become openly anti-Semitic. SpaceX and Tesla CEO Elon Musk has claimed after Democrat lawmaker Representative Rashida Tlaib had held up a small sign reading, quote, guilty of genocide and, quote, war criminal, as the Israeli Prime Minister spoke to Congress. People who have been lifelong Democrats refuse to accept the clear reality that the Democratic Party is rapidly becoming openly anti-Semitic, Musk replied, claiming that this trend is accelerating, not slowing down. So what's the punchline to this joke that Elon Musk is showing he is becoming? Representative Rashida Tlaib of the Democrat Party is of Palestinian ancestry, whom are anti-Semitic people. Her protest, identifying Netanyahu a war criminal and guilty of genocide, is a criminal indictment, not anti-Semitism. It's a call for help, actually, to stop the decimation of her Semitic ancestors. Being opposed to that, Elon Musk's opinion is anti-Semitic. Just as the guy who invited him here to Congress to listen to Satan Yehu in vowing to, quote, win a total victory in Gaza and fight until we destroy Hamas military capabilities as we watch them destroy the people. And children and women, all that are not fighting. Totally contrary to international law, as I've been through over and over on this. And within that Congress, so-called, the U.S. Knesset, was then attending genocidal maniacs, applauding their hitman, the agent they pay for and supply to commit genocide of a Semitic Palestinian people. If genocidal maniac and Trump-supporting technopaths can be considered a joke, is the antithesis of really what Musk is saying. And I'm not sure how it is that these people get along away with saying this. They are attacking, right? He was attacking a Palestinian woman, saying, stop the war criminal. And that is apparently anti-Semitic. Is anti-Semitic. Especially when we go in to see that Satan Yehu's Abraham alliance that he tied to Trump's work, the proposal is completely detached from reality. These people don't think too far through these processes. I'm asking those of us behind the woodshed, we do think things through. Israeli's prime minister has sketched the outlines of a new NATO-style alliance between Tel Aviv, Washington, and Arab countries, which he said could counter the growing Iranian threat. Now, notice the focus. As I talked about this other layer, what's going on with potentially with Trump. Dr. Mehran Kamrava, professor of government of Georgetown University Qatar campus, explains why the proposal is ludicrous. I think that an alliance between Israel and the Gulf states, etc., is a realistic assumption because Saudi Arabia normalizes relationships with Iran. Bahrain and Iran have been in conversations about rapprochement, and the UAE, despite having maintained its relationship with Israel, has also maintained a relationship with Iran, Kamrava pointed out. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu hopes to bring countries like Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, and UAE, and perhaps Egypt, into a new Israeli and U.S.-led NATO-style pact dubbed the Abraham Alliance, is not only unrealistic, but not original either, Kamrava told Sputnik, commenting on Netanyahu's Wednesday afternoon address to a joint session of the U.S. Congress. Abraham Alliance's proposal is not new, Kamrava stressed, noting that Netanyahu has been advocating this for a number of years with Israel's push to normalize ties with its Gulf neighbors seen as the first step in this direction. So, there is the acknowledgement that Satan Yehu's slap a Trump brand on Satan Yehu's prior plan, dubbing it something Trump could feel he had a hand in through the Abraham Accords when it was not part of it at all, but which tends to smooth things over with Trump, making Trump less resistant to support peace by going to war with Iran, something the Zionists desire more than life itself because it means that much. It means their very psychotic, deceptive, exclusive political existence. Today, Israel can only dependably rely on only on the United States Central Command in Washington for weapons that and other support, Kamrava said. That's because the Israeli lobby is quite powerful in the United States, particularly in the compromised Congress. He doesn't say compromise. With both parties, and all its major figures, from President Biden and Trump to Vice President Harris, Find that interesting statement. From President Biden and Trump to Vice President Harris, not Biden and Vice President Harris. Anyway, declaring themselves Zionists or otherwise voicing strong support for Israel. These are all genocidal psychopaths. Netanyahu, meanwhile, remains mired in a deep and hopeless political mess, Kamrava said, facing pressure from his left that want the hostages back and pressure from the Israeli army, which has said that it is unable now to bring the remaining hostages home through the continued use of force and the continuation of war, and the pressure from the right that want a complete eradication of Palestinians. That's genocidal, folks. Complete eradication of Palestinians. Complete eradication of Semitic Palestinians. Need I say more? Applaud, you congressional uniparty genocidal anti-Semitic psychopaths. Applaud. Watch the videos, folks. They applaud this psychopath. Did the anti-Semitic Netanyahu invited Trump technopath Elon Musk applaud too? I think he would have had to, and I think he did. If so, you all need to go to a small rock outcropping in the South China Sea. And it's not a question. If you get the link at the blogcaster, you see Elon Musk applauding the position that Netanyahu is presenting to the U.S. Congress. U.S. Knesset, it looked like to me. And subsequent to Trump meeting with Netanyahu, did I say relative to seeding Trump's mind, impressing him that the Iranian threats is more credible than a domestic hit to reinforce acting against Iran? And isn't this a license for the Zionist Mossad to use the cannibal directive to take out Trump, one of their own, the Zionist side? Remember, this is not religion. This is politics. Biden is a self-declared Zionist. He may be an Irish Zionist, but Zionist nonetheless. Trump hopes U.S. obliterates Iran if he's assassinated by American adversary. So here we had the conversation, and he comes right out and uses the word obliterates already. Former President Donald Trump called for Iran to be annihilated if the U.S. adversary were to ever assassinate him. Trump, 78, revealed his wish for ferocious retaliation in a Truth Social post on Thursday, in which he included the clip of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu discussing the Islamic Republic assassination threats during his address to Congress. That's not a proof. If you see how these people play off of each other. But this sets the stage that whomever the assassin, Iran done it. I suppose Putin or Russia doing it is out of the question now, but Iran done it. And here's the confirmation that Iranian assassins on every roof seed I said was planted in Trump is the sole reference for who to blame, whomever now tries, such as Mossad or some agency. Trump's call for his hypothetical death to be avenged comes less than 2 weeks after the would-be assassin's bullet grazed his ear at Butler, Pennsylvania. Remember, news is notice. It appears to me this deck is about as stacked as it can get, and the compromised genocidal Congress creatures are on board with that. 75 rounds of applesauce, 58 standing ovations. Not a critical thought in the bunch to identify the lies Netanyahu told, including that the U.S. is perpetually obligated to Israel, an illegal occupier, and unconditionally so. With the compromised genocidal Congress creatures on board with that, being the executive of the will of Congress, Trump becomes irrelevant to who directs the purse. Follow back what I've been saying, how I've connected this through to see the plausibility of this. Now, it's being reported that Netanyahu has received full legitimacy in the United States to wage war in Lebanon now. greenlighting a wider war on Lebanon, which is actually targeting Hezbollah, which is a proxy of Iran. Now, how anyone can give legitimacy to this or to Netanyahu is anyone's guess. But this is what is being reported. And also that now a U.S. Air Force intelligence aircraft, the RQ-4B Global Hawk, with call sign Forte-15, is flying at about 54,000 feet above the Lebanese coast. All this happens within 24 hours. And on July 26, 2024, the United States issued a memorandum on the deferred enforcement departure for certain Lebanese nationals. The United States government cites humanitarian reason and the conflict between Hezbollah and Israel, which means, most likely, that the U.S. knows of an inevitable invasion of Lebanon by Israel and has issued the memorandum to hinder the continued visitation or other things such as visas of the Lebanese citizens in the U.S. And similar here, look through what happened in the past. There's a different disaster prior. An issuance like this occurred for the passport holders of the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan before the Taliban took over the country, and that was by a few weeks as the U.S. saw the inevitable collapse of the government and the country there. It likely means that the Zionist Federation movement is going to war with Lebanon to take out Hezbollah on its way to war with Iran for a greater Israel, and to Hades with the lawful inhabitants, which the U.S. is already paying for, to take out. The Zionist hitman, Netanyahu, has nothing to lose as he takes action to evade his alleged criminal past in Palestine, what they call Israel, in Palestine, which is on hold while he is in office, immune. And except that the Taliban, here, think back, won the prior one, not the occupying United States government. But the AIPAC Zionist Compromise Genocidal Congress critters are on board with all this anyway. And I just have to say and observe, it was a disgrace what I noticed. I didn't see the whole speech. I didn't watch. I watched clips after it. Just little bits and pieces that seemed to have the bits and pieces. Yes, I wanted to hear. Not that I wanted to hear. He made statements completely contrary to what he should have been accepted by the U.S. Congress, and that's why they're becoming noteworthy. So, this is not the country your founding forefathers fought for, or the government that they established. But, Trump, Kamala, yeah, things are going to get real mean, says Occam. And given there could be a different level to the gameplay here, as I've identified a new layer potentially to accommodate some plausible discussion going on about the assassination attempt. The ongoing here call for war against Iran, we now meet the fall gal relative to this whole operation. That again, you don't need to have to carry excess baggage, and someone's got to be shut up over the issue so other information doesn't come out. There's not enough evidence. U.S. Secret Service Director resigns over Trump assassination attempt. U.S. Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheatle has stepped down from her position following widespread calls for her resignation over the attempted assassination of Republican nominee Donald Trump. Her resignation comes after she was grilled by U.S. House lawmakers on Monday about the agency's failure to secure Trump's July 13th rally in Butler, Pennsylvania. Commenting on the development, U.S. House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer said that Cheatle's resignation is seen as a step toward accountability. But a thorough review of the USSS security lapses that led to an assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump is crucial to avoid future incidents. So it's looked at that. It's too bad she resigned before the investigation finished that she used to avoid the committee members' questions that we were talking about last week. But this is how this will work. And it's going to take a whole lot more effort to get this brought forward, as is seemingly planned. And that investigation needed access to Crook's iPhone, and they got in, and we got this from them. Android easier to hack than iPhones, forensic experts. Android-based phones may be easier targets for hackers and government agencies than iPhones, news outlet 404 Media has claimed, citing leaked documents alleged intended for customers of the Israeli digital intelligence company Cellebrite. The issue of cell phone users' privacy has recently been highlighted after the FBI revealed on Monday that its technical specialist successfully gained access to Thomas Matthew Crook's phone. The authorities stopped short of divulging what device the suspected shooter in the attempted assassination of former President Donald Trump was using. And so notice to the wise, this is not even unknown. But when you read that, it also says that there were some phones that could not be accessed and what they might be. And that Cellebrite may be actually losing a bit of its grip on this ability, but it, in fact, it was an Israeli company that has done it. Cellebrite's not new in the news. And so we've got some interesting, I thought that was interesting information. We were told that there's no information, and then they said they got in it. We're not going to get that information. But again, doesn't really matter. If the motive is what I believe it plausibly is, and there's no evidence contrary to that, they're finding nothing that they're going to talk about. They can't use it to exploit anything either. And in a way, why would they? This week's news after the Satan Yahoo Trump meeting is all they needed. Unless he's telling them a big fib to get them to look the other way while he's going to do something else, I don't know yet. But before that, Cheadle resigned. During that committee testimony, did anyone else's ears perk up when she said continuity of government? Now, I've got a link. You can watch the video. Kimberly Cheadle says there's a difference between a sitting president and a continuity of government and the responsibility we have. Isn't that interesting? Which is it then? Which reality do you live under? Now, I asked both Alex Jones and the Health Ranger on ex-Twitter, but I haven't got an answer. I don't really like their sensationalism, but anyway, we can get down to the foundational stuff and try to get some real good information. I asked them because of their pervasiveness everywhere. Maybe they had an opinion on that. That's a very interesting statement. And when I asked, I responded to Alex Jones saying, to Health Ranger, saying, looks like a coup is actually underway right now. All power is being stripped away from Biden and delegated to others. And Alex Jones responds, next they will move on Trump and the American people. Again, the deep state is consolidating its dictatorial powers over the executive branch before accelerating to the next stage of converting the republic into an oligarchy dictatorship. I found that fascinating, because I just asked about continuity government, didn't I? So I asked Alex Jones, either of you, or both Health Rangers, either of you, or anyone else know, what the context of the cheaters referencing continuity of government as opposed to the president relative to the duties of her office? No, there's no answer from that, folks, and I doubt that I'll ever get one. No one is actually interested in context, it seems. But what did she mean by her own words? And likely, it obstructs the clickbait sensationalization profit motive that seems to affect these guys. Cheater says, there's a difference between a sitting president and continuity of government and the responsibility we have. The answer to that would explain loads, likely most of what we need to know. Trump isn't a sitting president, so that's irrelevant. In fact, continuity of government is a premise upon the loss of a president and the succession of leadership and what responsibility to the DHS has extended to the Secret Service in that regard. Putting words in her mouth, I think we can tell what she meant. I've mentioned it routinely. Post-founding father Lincolnized war of terror era governance. And there is no protection to the president under continuity of government. And what happened to Trump? Interesting comment indeed. Glossed over by, I think, tons of people. Maybe there's a mundane response or answer to that, but I don't think so. She brought it up particularly, and she was in invasion mode, so she's going to bring out some firepower and bring it into another level of analysis that likely the Congress people they're asking questions weren't going to be able to do while they sat there looking at it. I find it also fascinating how frustrated they got when she just kept saying there was an investigation. She has no answers to them. And the first time, 15 times she said that, they didn't get the idea the first time that they weren't going to get that answer. And they didn't then quickly change into the mode of the form of the question in order to get at other things that they could have done, which tends to tell me that we're not going to see much. They're not capable, even so, in one regard. However, very interesting dynamic. If anybody has an answer to that, or even a foundational thought about why she said that, and then in context with that condition, I'd like to hear it, because I think there's something inside there. It might explain what we've been watching, literally, since 9/11, and the continuity of government imposition, as I've been suggesting. The buildup through all this, when we think we live in America, you know, we live in the United States, and there's a big difference. Lincolnization did us dirt. No one kind of pays attention to that. And we might find out, though I doubt it, state secrets and all, as we hear Trump promising to declassify assassination attempt case materials if elected president. And he's doing a lot of this promising these things, which would be interesting to get. Why does he have to promise it? Why isn't it just forthcoming, is it? My first thought. Yeah, sure. There should be nothing to hide, Trump said, replying to the related question. He also said that many of the details of the assassination attempt were already known, adding that some of the things that are known are bad. The question is how the shooter could get on the roof and why he was not reported, Trump added. But what about the JFK files? There should be nothing to hide, even if they are bad, right, Trump? Here's the problem I have with Trump. He didn't release those files, even if there's nothing there. Even if it's bad. And this is so minor in a way. Partly because he didn't talk. Yes, they don't want it to happen again. But if there was a plan set up in order to impress him, they can do that in lots of ways. And so this next article I found notice to us has got to get a substantial distance toward proving continuity of government governance runs the place, because a president, the cabinet knows, is subject to the 25th Amendment, is not running the place. Democratic bigwigs threatened Biden with 25th Amendment to oust him from the race, this administrative internal coup that they're talking about. Don't miss the point, and I hope you have it. I'm just speaking consistently with what you've already seen. And really watching how they're manipulating all this, and they manipulate people, is what they're doing with all this. And there's no action either, which is another manipulation. Joe Biden had to withdraw from the U.S. presidential race last week after threats of high-ranking Democrats to forcibly remove him from office, the New York Post reports, citing unnamed sources. I'm not worried about all that. Normally, these unnamed sources just forget the story. However, look at the dynamic. Given this is true, and look at what's going on. How can it continue? The well-orchestrated palace coup has been in place for weeks, with Biden fighting it every step of the way, sources claim, referring to anger, paranoia, and frustration allegedly shown by the 46th U.S. president as the party elite piled pressure on him. The top Democrats have threatened to invoke the 25th Amendment to the United States Constitution to stop Biden from seeking re-election, the insiders argue, recalling that the document authorizes the vice president and members of the Biden administration to declare the president unfit for service. Now, if he is unfit for service, but for the cabinet action, he is still unfit for service right now. So Biden's entire cabinet is corrupt to each and every member in not doing what the Constitution requires that they would do. And in the wake of the assassination attempt, the sitting president did not successfully avoid an inside coup and the supposed installed successor. And as in most things, there is a lot that can be learned when things go wrong. As we read, not woke enough, why BLM up in arms against Harris's endorsement by Democrats. Black Lives Matter, don't turn off here, folks. We're not talking about these, you'll hear how this is irrelevant. These guys are irrelevant. And then you'll see more of the truth, hopefully, if you're automatically thinking, oh, this is about Black Lives Matter. Well, this is just an organization, and I'll get to that too. Lay it in context. Don't put any politics on it. Don't put on what you see them fomenting. Look at what they're telling us in these news articles. Black Lives Matter has urged the Democratic National Committee to immediately host an informal snap primary across the United States, quote, to create a process that allows for public participation in the nomination process of Kamala Harris. Kamala. Mean Harris. U.S.-based pressure group Black Lives Matter has slammed the way VP Kamala Harris has been named as the presumed Democrat presidential candidate in a public statement. Quote, a 24-hour process of talking to party bosses is not democratic, nor is it a process Democrats should be proud of, the BLM said in a statement. And listen for the truth of this as I explain what there really is going on here and what they're exposing to everybody. And people are not necessarily understanding this. Installing Harris as a Democratic nominee, quote, without any public voting process, would make the modern Democratic Party a party of hypocrites, the group claimed, warning that, quote, this blatant disregard for democratic principles is unacceptable. The movement accused Democratic Party elites and billionaire donors of trying, quote, to manipulate black voters by anointing Harris and an unknown vice president as the new Democratic ticket without primary vote by the public. So, BLM, any other agenda nonsense aside, as I said, let us look closely at this word salad, objecting to the installation of word salad Annie to find the fallacies. This statement by BLM is intended to manipulate black voters. BLM, as an organization, doesn't vote within every either party at all. It's just an organization. It has no standing even to complain. Any vote, so-called, in material disagreement would be to put its money where its non-existent mouth is and donate to the Republican or other party. This is private party politics. These are private organizations, these parties. So another fallacy is that there would never be a public vote. Quote, hosting an informal snap primary across the United States, close quote, will not involve the entire population. Voting requires a status, not a demographic. And not all blacks, so-called, thereby that demographic, are Democrats. Another fallacy in this supposed demand for a democratic process is it suggests voting generally includes the entire population, and it never does, even within political party membership, and that voting does not include the incorporation known as BLM or any other legal entity. Everyone that doesn't vote is not counted as a no, or a no confidence, or no trust, or no keeping status quo, or whatever the reason for the non-participation, which is never identified anyway. So in any regard, a minority of population through voting dictates the rest. Even those that believe those few have no right to be considered a majority enough to interfere with their lives or through the imposed democratic so-called process. As well, I believe there is a recent court case also confirming these private political parties can pretty much do whatever they want because they are private organizations. The only constraints would be limits of the law or where prosecuted, if you can do that. Keeping the trust and confidence of those duped members as well is what they do. They're like a government in a way. Corporations are like a government in a way. Got to keep your trust and confidence and support. And so the whole trust and confidence thing is to get those duped members to vote harder for their team. And being a private political corporation, there are no democratic principles beyond the private special interest involved internally. The only democratic principle involved is to vote pedestrian. In other words, voting with one's feet. The other unstated fallacy is the president and vice president are not selected by vote of the people, the public, they call it, but are elected by an electorate, members of the electoral college from the candidates selected by these private political parties from which is chosen the few electors, not voters. And those members may be elected by a vote of the people of each respective jurisdiction or their representatives, such that they are in the post-founding father era of legalization. And I don't know why people don't get this. Everyone who does participates in a private party politics. It's like a labor union of some nature. The only thing I believe this type of report and challenge by the woke groups does is to promote feckless direct democracy. So when it finally arrives, people will accept it. The Supreme Court already allowed people to vote directly for senators. The same divestment was accomplished in the states of county government representation in the state senates. And that's not envisioned by the organic establishment that put prevailing 10th Amendment local government prominence in writing, not to usurp the prevailing 9th Amendment reservations to the people, which any unenumerated power, those not constitutionally granted, shall not be construed to be denied or disparaged. This destructive incremental acceptance technique is a sort of same technique used in offering the oh-so-convenient buy ammo with a biometric face scan and government document submission. They get you here with mind, body, and spirit in the act of doing it. You lower your standard, you lower your expectations, the principles, and they got you. It's that simple. And in doing so, whereas here in the rallying around non-existent democratic processes, people of any political persuasion failed to keep the republic, are oblivious to that fact, and are now more predisposed to further destructive deception transformation, which is what this is all geared to do. And no matter the party president leading the political parade, you get whatever is the government of the republic the people didn't keep. The result is what you are seeing today as we look out. And I've said open fraud without remedy. What that means is, in law, is that there's no valid law. None being used. Being every law must provide immediate remedy or accountability. And there is none. Again, you knows them when you sees them. For all I've had to read and research and put together and think about and synthesize, we don't have to actually dig so deep. The simple statements that we see in places don't have to be complicated. And in taking some parting shots, Trump reacts to Biden exiting the race. The Republican presidential candidate mentioned in a phone call to CNN that he believes Vice President Kamala Harris will be easier to defeat. Quote, crooked Joe Biden was not fit to run for president, and is certainly not fit to serve, and never was. He only attained the position of presidency by lies, fake news, and not leaving his basement. All those around him, including his doctor and the media, knew that he wasn't capable of being president, and he wasn't, Trump wrote. Apparently, not just anyone else in the United States, but Russia knew about the coup. As they respond, time to investigate collusion about Biden's health. United States president's condition goes back years, the Russian Foreign Ministry spokesman has claimed. there needs to be an investigation into the possible conspiracy about American political circles, among American political circles, and the media to manipulate the public regarding President Joe Biden's health, Russian Foreign Minister spokeswoman Maria Zakharova has said. Commenting on his announcement in the interview with Russia media, Zakharov noted it was highly unusual to have just a screenshot of a letter posted on social media rather than a video or audio statement. Quote, in the modern world filled with post-truth and deep fakes, it's very important to leave room for speculation, Zakharov said. Assuming Biden's letter is authentic, as the U.S. media and the public alongside them appear to have done, it raises the question of investigating what I call the collusion of American media with political circles, including officials and the so-called expert community, who hide the true state of affairs regarding Biden's mental health, she added. Anyone who truly cares about free speech, transparency, and our democracy in America should support this, according to Zakharova. It's time to highlight all these statements and actions of this manipulation machine, their propaganda, and lies. Zakharova added that the questions about Biden's cognitive capabilities have been raised for years, 4 years ago, back in 2020. The Democrat did not bother to campaign actively, but stayed in his basement and repeatedly made gaffes in video interviews with supporters and friendly media. He then officially won the election by the most votes ever in U.S. history. If anyone doesn't think people outside of America don't pay attention, it seems the basement was a fantastic place. And the point being for us in this foreign observation, until these sorts of political collusion are immediately arrested, that people lose their licenses, offices, or worse, the laws are meaningless. Just said, laws without remedy are not laws. Sure, Russia has taken a pot shot at America, but I think we deserve it. This is episode BTWRLM 587. And I criticize the tangible purpose of non-binding judicial opinions, being useless as well, on its own or relative to the supposed enforcing body. Beyond that, this next story that I'm going to go through a little extensively has a meaning. But again, if you're not going to respond, there's no remedy for it. What's the point? It becomes more of just an awareness. And on this, when we go through this, take note if there isn't something here relative to the underlying active principles you haven't heard before behind OSHA. In most all of this following discussion of Tariq Cyril Amar. As a non-binding opinion, all I see here is 16 more people that see the same Zionist-created stinking abyss. As we read, what the top UN court's ruling means for Israel. Though non-binding, and this was my criticism of it, coming out the gate, the ICJ's ruling of the ongoing Gaza massacre strip away the Jewish state's ability to obfuscate its crimes. The 15 judges of the International Court of Justice, the highest judicial organ of the United Nations, has issued what everyone agrees is a landmark finding, the legal consequences arising from the policies and practices of Israel in the occupied Palestine territory, including East Jerusalem, is, in essence, a devastating condemnation of Israel's policies and crimes in the territories which it conquered more than a half a century ago as a consequence of the Six-Day War of 1967, which it still holds today. And again, I'm reading this, but I don't necessarily agree on certain points in, to the depth or comprehensive nature or application. For instance, in that regard, conquered half a century ago, there's no telling Israel is going to hold this. And if they can't hold it, they haven't conquered those people. That's the only difference in determining whether a people are conquered. Can you come back as a people? Even with help. In fact, there's an international law about helping the defenses. Anyway, so when we read this, we read for this guy's statements, I think, are largely well written. However, there are actions in the world that need to be taken. And unless those actions are taken, they're just an awareness here. They're just an opinion. although they may be principally correct. The ICJ finding also inevitably means, whether the judges intend it or not, that not only Israel's policy in these specific territories, but the Zionist project as such, is based on the irreparable injustice of violently depriving the Palestinians of their inalienable right to national self-determination. Again, just listen, if you've heard my broadcast, what haven't I talked about already? This is also coming up. We have 16 more people essentially concurring with what I said behind the woodshed. There's more and more of us that have an understanding of a very comprehensive violation going on. Tariq Cyril Amar writes, make no mistake, this is not merely a blow to the crimes of Israeli occupation and annexation. It calls into question the foundations of Israel as a state, as it is built around the systematic defiance of justice, law, and elementary ethics. The ICJ has recognized without qualification that Israel's holding of territories it seized during the Six-Day War, including East Jerusalem, which Israel has officially, though unlawfully, annexed, and the West Bank, which it pretends to occupy but is in reality annexing anyway, is illegal and needs to end ASAP. In particular, the ICJ made it clear that all settlement must cease, and that the settlers already on these territories must leave. The decision alone means that between 700,000 and 750,000 Israeli illegals, here that term is for once exactly correct, should not be where they are. Not only do all of them have to leave to over 100 settlements that they never had right to establish, the Israeli state has an obligation to evacuate them. Moreover, Israel's expropriations of land are also illegal, that is, simply put, theft. The ICJ has ordered it to return what it has stolen, that is, tens of thousands of acres. Again, I'll interject a bit. If you folks in America, with your patent law and patent rights, are listening, you're seeing your own government interfering with property in this regard as well. Again, I'm not reading just about Israel. I'm not reading about the Palestinians. I'm not reading about a territorial purported conquest, an occupation. Your government in the United States, and most all governments, do that where you live. And these general international principles give us a foundation for actually supporting our own views that you will be not denied when you try to assert them. And so, I'm not just reading somebody's opinion here. Apply these principles around you. Look around you. Listen to what the Supreme Court just said in destroying executive agency interference with our properties. Destroying their granted disposal uses. Destroying the production from them, or the potential production. The Israeli state is, of course, deeply implicated in the illegal acts that the ICJ has ordered it to stop and even reverse. Israel's long-standing policies of incentivizing its Jewish citizens, including de facto colony settlers from anywhere in the world, to move into the illegally held territories and steal Palestinian land and resources is fundamentally criminal, among other reasons, because it is inconsistent with international law, particularly the humanitarian law enshrined in the Geneva Convention. And years ago, I told you when they went after and hit the resource, the raw material resources. That's a war crime. That's right in law. In fact, we put that in a comment over into, I think it was the EPA, and waters of the United States definition. They're interfering with production, raw materials, resources. That's a war crime. Certainly where they wouldn't have no right, and when the government has disposed it to somebody, they have lost the right. Well, but for that little hinge attachment that says they can take if they can pay by due process. And I've explained, if there was a given a judiciary there to see it, they can't come back on their grant. And so we have another type of presentation there, but not for this story here. This is looking at abject criminal in the world that's not being stopped. That a more group of people, they call them judges in the ICJ, have said, you have to stop. And they won't. And one more guy here writing about that problem. Regarding the Gaza Strip, long a de facto concentration camp from its Palestinian inhabitants, and since October 2023, the site of Israeli's ongoing genocidal massacre against them, the ICJ has clearly rejected the all-too-conveniently heard Israeli argument that its forces retreated from it in 2005. The ICJ also clarified the issues of apartheid. As should be well known, apartheid is a recognized crime under international law. It is not merely a name for one specific criminal regime once practiced in South Africa. Under, for instance, the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court, not to be confused with the ICJ, the crime of apartheid is defined as the crime against humanity, akin to, for instance, murder, extermination, enslavement, or torture. Also, according to the Rome Statute, what makes apartheid special is that it is an institutionalized regime of systematic oppression and domination by one racial group over any other racial group or groups, and committed with the intention of maintaining that regime. I need to interject here. Race is a group. It's not a color. Race is an identifiable group. Chickens are a race. And when you go to the Doubleday Dictionary, I think it was 1974, and you look up the word, they identify the race of lawyers underneath the definition of race. Let's get back to that institutionalized regime of systematic oppression, and you look at the Bar Association. Back to the story here. Put simply, apartheid is literally one of the worst crimes of regime and the people supporting and working for it can possibly commit. Applesauce from the Congress. In the case of the Israeli unbiased experts and various human rights organizations have long argued that it is committing the crime as well. The ICJ has addressed this issue, noting arguments, quote, that Israel's policies and practices in the occupied Palestinian territory amount to segregation or apartheid in breach of Article 3 of CERD, that is, the Convention of the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, also known as the International Convention of the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, the ICERD. Article 3 of the CERD imposes on states the duty not only to condemn racial segregation and apartheid, but also to undertake to prevent, prohibit, and eradicate all practices of this nature in territories under their jurisdiction. The ICJ has concluded that Israel, by its legislation and measures, that is really by everything it does as a state, is in breach of this key provision. Israel, let me interject again here. This case as well, don't forget to look back. They jump in at the Six-Day War. This issue in Palestine starts way, way earlier, and they're not even addressing that, which would make that last paragraph irrelevant. The state of Israel has no place underneath the provisions of the agreements that were set up. Israel, in sum, a state practicing the crime against humanity of apartheid, de facto annexing and settling territories it has no conceivable legal claim on, and systematically denying a whole nation, the Palestinians, of their right to self-determination. The court has also finished off any pretense that Israel can justify its continuing pervasive criminality by alleged security needs. Those are only some of the ICJ's key findings, and I want to interject here. Please go read this finding and pull them out. Make a list. You'll see violations in your countries, and they just shovel them off and put them under the rug, and no one pays attention to them. Other concerns of Palestinian, remember I said, he's talking about open-air concentration. I said this is an open-air prison in Palestine that reflects the United States, and we don't know it here. Other concerns of Palestinian rights to restitution, return and reparations, for instance, for anyone even vaguely familiar with how the Israeli state operates, it is obvious that these ICJ findings have declared its core principles illegal. And they are. And you listen now, you look at the list of remedy, and you see equity right there. Go look and research all those. The restitution, return, reparations. Go find out what they attach to. And yet, Congress and Elon Musk applaud Netanyahu on this. This was after this was issued on as well. I go speechless if I had to think about that part. Many states, at least, those with enough power break international law, some quite habitually. The United States, for instance. Some only occasionally. Israel, however, is special. By virtue of its own freely chosen policies informed by a nationalist ideology of supremacy and colonial settlement, it has made breaking international law its reason of state. Without it, it is hard to even imagine how it can continue. Note, in this respect, that its ministers of defense and its prime minister are on the verge of having warrants issued against them for crimes against humanity and war crimes by the International Criminal Court, which the ICJ has already found that genocide is a plausible possibility in Gaza, and since Israel has brutally disregarded all its injunctions, will most likely confirm that the finding in a final judgment in the not-too-distant future. As I have said, they've admitted to it. It's not even a... I have to look at the courts. I don't have to look at moral opinions. It's out of the mouth of the psychopath, out of the criminal. They've admitted. One thing, and so this is just a waste of time. That's why I say it's just nothing. Is it really, we need to get an awareness. We need to read these words. We need to go read that opinion. They delineated things from findings of fact and study. We need to bring them into us and understand the violations that are going on to the Palestinians, because they're violations to, I think, most all people, to different scales, for sure. But one thing that the ICJ, the findings confirm is, of course, that the Palestinians have a right to armed resistance under international law. Another thing that follows is that many things that Israel and its Western backers pretend are up for negotiation are not. How many times have I told you about that, too, in a lot of different areas? They make an issue that's really not supposed to be on the table, and we start negotiating that. We've lost. We've lost. And so when you see the Palestinians not wanting to engage, international law says they're right not to engage, because as soon as you acknowledge that offer and it's wrong, you agree to that lessened capacity. This is some really high-level acknowledgement here. Palestine, I wish the people of America had it. They're just amazing. It's almost a step above the way I can see it written, but to really hold that level is quite a work in your mind, quite a work to... keep that level of the sovereignty, essentially, is what that is. Palestinians have a right to get their land back. Israel has no right to use it in any way, not even as a bargaining chip. A third thing also follows, but from the Israeli response, the whole Israeli political spectrum, not only the Prime Minister Netanyahu and the other extremists in his cabinet, has rejected the ICJ findings. Hence, the illusion that the problem with Israel is just a few radicals in power must be buried once and for all. Unfortunately, its delusions of domination and supremacy are widespread throughout its political sphere and its society. Israel is the worst rogue state in the world, and it is also a dead end. For that, let me interject there. If it's a dead end and that comes to fruition, those people are not conquered. The threat that Iran and its proxies, they claim, pose to Israel. I said it is an existential threat, their own psychopathy to themselves. And so I take issue with Mr. Amar's discussion that these are conquered lands. It's not quite over in my mind. Like, it's not quite over in America. It sure looks like it, but maybe not here. For that, it cannot, as its elites usually do, blame external enemies or anti-Semitism. In reality, its own arrogance and outrageous violence against the Palestinians and its neighbors are to blame. Israel's long arm will reach enemies anywhere. Netanyahu will actually tell you that. Of course, these ICJ findings, as many cynics will remind us, will not compel Israel to change. Indeed, as U.S. Special Rapporteur Francesca Albanese has pointed out, Israel's usual response to being called out is to commit even more crimes, as if to make a point about its defiance of international law. Yet it is short-sighted to believe the ICJ's condemnation is irrelevant. Well, it's not irrelevant, but is a far cry from being enforceable. That is my contention with it. And until enforceability, there's no law, international or otherwise. We can read, for one thing, the ICJ has been explicit that all other states have a duty to cooperate with the United Nations to bring about an end to Israel's illegal presence in the occupied Palestinian territory and the full realization of the right of the Palestinian people to self-determination. In addition, the judges also reiterate in great detail that not only other states, but also international organizations, specialized agencies, investment corporations, BlackRock, State Street, Vanguard, and other institutions must not recognize or cooperate or assist any manner in any measures undertaken by Israel to exploit the resources of the occupied territories or to effect any changes in the demographic composition of geographic character or institutional character of those territories. I read that and I said, how much did I miss, folks? I don't think I missed one little thing there. And I guess the point being is we all understood this is so clear. This is not, I told you, it's not an argument. What's going on? It's that it continues. Is, I kind of say, shame on us. But we see, we all have a duty. Now, they put it on organizational sizes, which is probably more proper, but those organizations are have people in them. They're just legal fronts. They're just paper. But there's people inside them. In essence, the ICJ has put all governments on this planet on notice that they are not free to do as they please about Israel and its crimes, but that they are bound by laws to help stop them and abstain from being accomplices. Just what I've been saying, just as I said when all the governments got together to recognize the state of Israel, that they were in on it. They are part, they're accessories to this crime. And that's their embarrassment. They'd have to come out and condemn the state and then move. And part of that would be moving to stop it. Anyway, here we go. Read some more here. That, of course, is an aspect of the findings that should concern the many hypocrites and accomplices in the EU, in the US, such as Germany Chancellor Olaf Scholz, for instance, who cannot see anything but a comprehensive compliance with international law when he looks at Israel. But then that's the same Olaf Scholz, of course, who can't figure out who blew up his country's gas pipelines. Likewise, the leaders of the UK, with the Labour friend of Israel and embarrassingly human rights lawyer Keir Starmer in the lead, and those of the US in the process of co-perpetrating the genocide in Gaza, should feel at least some discomfort. Standing by Israel will not be cost-free much longer. Ultimately, the single most important result of these ICJ findings has to do with the enormous role that systematic obfuscation, in plain language, lying, plays for the Israeli regime and its society. All those who have long named Israel systemic crimes and called for resistance to them, whether outside or inside Palestine, now have, in effect, the highest court of the world on their side. And I would say the law precedes them, and you were right to stand on the law, and you'd be on the right side of history to do so, and behind the woodshed, I just advocate everybody do that, and you've heard me advocate that for years. There is no more room for debate about what Israel is doing, and once that has been settled, there is no argument left for defending it. The ICJ findings won't suddenly change the world, but when the world does change, they will have played an important role. And I guess I have to agree to that extent. You compile your findings, you put them in one place for everybody to see, and shame on us for not paying attention, even though the law was there, as I've been talking about it, just ad hoc as I do. I don't think I missed a point in this thing that says we have a bigger cause in us to rise up to. And we don't. And it's domestic. The open-air prison. And how we treat each other. And I'm not saying I have an answer to this. This is a serious problem, but this is put on people. Economies are destroyed on purpose. And people suffer. I'm not sure what the total answer is here, but the Supreme Court came up with one, as we see our inhumanity to man playing out right in the States. And I talked a little bit about it, didn't touch more of the case. It absolutely it insulted me. The homeless, making homeless crime criminals. We now see that coming out. The case is now being put in play. It's another type of domestic humanitarian crime, criminalizing the homeless. Newsom, a Democratic presidential candidate hopeful, issues executive order for removal of homeless encampments in California. California Governor Gavin Newsom ordered the state agencies to start removing homeless encampments on state land Thursday. And this is kind of an interesting problem. In one regard, and I know I can hear people already saying, well, you're going to have people, you know, encamped in front of businesses and all that. No, that's not what I'm saying. Those, and you'll see, the order says that the ones that cause trouble and problems, like with the highways. But the Supreme Court said something else has to happen before any of this can actually get into play. And that's really what I'm speaking to. As the state gets destroyed because it's chosen to accept federal funding, it's chosen to stay in fiat when it could actually make gold and silver legal tender, when it allows itself to be taken down, the people themselves, the it of the state, have to rise up to protect those that are the lesser before it can cause them to be criminals. And so listen for that as well in here. You're just hearing, as I go through this, you'll start to hear that. They take a Supreme Court precedent and then they misapply it. All of state lands, they're going to remove them. That doesn't even sound correct on its face. Around the highways, maybe so. It can be dangerous, although, you know, I haven't heard, maybe I haven't heard a ton of problems around the highways with so many people living under the underpasses. I've been pretty impressed with that. Why don't we have more deaths on the highway? Someone's paying attention in this need. But your California government, Gavin Newsom, ordered state agencies Thursday to start removing homeless encampments on state land in his boldest action yet, following the Supreme Court ruling allowing cities to enforce bans on sleeping outside in public spaces. So much for protecting the huddled masses, it seems to me. Last month, the United States Supreme Court overturned a lower court ruling that said governments could not force people to leave encampments if there weren't any shelter beds available. So listen for that. They could not force people to leave their encampments if there weren't any shelter beds available. The case was the most significant of the problem to come before the high court in decades. Cities across the country have been wrestling with the politically complicated task of how to deal with the rising number of people without a permanent place to live and public frustration over related health and safety issues. So there's your police power that they think they're coming in to use. That's legitimate, except there's a condition, and I don't think I've heard it being met. And we'll read some more, and you tell me whether you hear for it. I don't hear. I'll comment to it when I get there. The executive order directs state agencies, quote, to move urgently to address dangerous encampments while supporting and assisting the individuals living in them. It also provides guidance for cities and counties to do the same, which applies pressure on them, though they are not legally bound to the order. And so we're back to unenforceability at some point, and also consent, correct? As you saw me refer to the Grants Pass homeless case, they talked about that. They couldn't force these cities, and some of these cities are not doing this. They're trying to figure out, it's a serious problem. And it is a problem. And it isn't cool. And it's not right. And people are being interfered with that maybe ought not to be. Everybody gets affected when someone's manipulating your economy. And we don't turn to that either. It doesn't say direct, assist, or take people to an available state-run shelter here, do it. In that statement, you don't hear take directly or assist or take the people to an available state-run shelter is the main problem here. There's no direction to that. Ban and assist are not congruent in this statement, in this execution. Quote, I applaud Governor Newsom's emphasis on urgency, Catherine Barger, a member of the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors, said in a statement. He rightfully points out that local government remains at the helm of homeless encampment removals. Cities have an obligation to develop housing and shelter solutions in tandem with support services provided by county government. Newsom touted that his administration has spent roughly $24 billion cleaning up streets and housing people, but acknowledged the persistent issue. So, right there he says the cities haven't met the housing part of the equation, doesn't it? It's still an issue. How then are they lawfully cleaning the streets then? But it's not about helping homeless, but helping other Democratic Party politicians, as we read on in the story. And it's kind of couched and hidden in the statement, but in execution, in application, who's going to take this ball and run down the field with it? You see that it's actually what they're doing. That's not used to help homeless. It's going to use to help a co-party member, that private political organization. The order comes as Republicans have stepped up their criticism of Vice President Kamala Harris, a former California District Attorney, Attorney General, and Senator who just launched her presidential campaign. I got to interject. How does she become word salad Annie with that sort of background? Is just a mind blower. However, there she be. Harris entered the race over the weekend after President Joe Biden announced that he would not seek re-election. Newsom himself has presidential ambitions, though he has said he won't run against Harris or Biden. He has long been a top Biden campaign surrogate. The timing of the executive order is curious, given recent developments in the 2024 presidential race, California political analyst Brian Sobel said. He doubts, though, that Newsom's move would have much impact on Harris's campaign. Harris's problem isn't in California, because California is a done deal, he said. Where she needs to do well on issues like this are in the swing state. So, in fact, it helps Kamala, Mean Harris, in swing states, but not the homeless. They don't care about you. They don't care about the homeless. I don't want homeless people living on someone's business porch. I don't want them living in your front yard. But where the government allows the economy to be destroyed, there's an obligation in the government. You can just read this right in that ICJ statement. There's an obligation to help the people that are being destroyed and defenseless. Can I say that's even a Christian value? And so when I talk about it's over there, Israel, the Palestinians, we got an ICJ opinion and this and that. There are principles that apply right across the board, and you see them violated at every turn. And it may not even be the law. As we found, Jefferson Mining District and the miners, as I found in my studies, the courts might want to take jurisdiction over an issue that where the law is wrong. And I don't know how many times, almost 100% of the time, you look at the law is completely right. It's execution of the law that's completely illegal. And they don't want to listen to that. And that's another type of internalized systemic bias and destruction. That's completely, once identified, is to be stopped. If we needed the ICJ to tell us. Like I said, go read that discussion. You're going to get a whole list of stuff that should be going on in the world. You walk around, you're not going to see hardly any of it. Then you find everybody's involved in the scene of the crime. They're part of it. And as we have this decline in our economy, forced so, and again, by our consent, we have a choice, and we aren't taking it. We aren't utilizing it. And that's going to be our downfall. Our consent is what we do. Indeed. You know yourself when you see yourself. They know you too when they see you, what you're doing. The replacement theory in reverse here, that you will leave your country, you leave your own country, leaving it to the immigrant to keep up. This one's from Peter St. Ange, Prof. St. Ange. Kanuckistan's worst decline in 40 years. Interesting how people respond to this. They won't step up in defense of themselves ahead, but they'll decide that it's better to move ahead and move. Canada's standard of living is on track for its worst decline in 40 years, according to a new study by Canada's Fraser Institute. The study compared the three worst periods of decline in Canada in the last 40 years. The 1989 recession, the 2008 global financial crisis, and this post-pandemic era. They found that unlike the previous recessions, Canada is not recovering this time. Something broke. In fact, according to the Financial Post, since 2019, Canada's had the worst growth out of 50 developed economies. Inflation adjusted, Canadian wages have been flat since 2016. So yes, something broke. And it's nowhere near over. Canada's per person real GDP is still falling, and with a looming U.S. recession, the U.S. is 75% of Canada's exports. Canada could crash again before it ever recovered. But enough of those stats here. Let me get to the punchline supporting my lead. An Ipsos poll found 7 in 10 Canadians agree that Canada is broken, rising to 8 in 10 of those between the age of 18 and 34. Thank you very much, youngsters. Angus found fully 42% of Canadians are considering moving to another country. That means almost half of you Kanuckistanians listening to me must be already having your bag packed. But where do you go? We read in the article. In short, incomes in West Virginia level, housing prices are in Los Angeles are level, the Canadian taxes are halfway to the Soviet Union. It's not rare for the middle class family in Canada to pay half their income in taxes. It's going to 75%, folks. And that's not going to the taxes. Meanwhile, since the pandemic, Canada's official food inflation is up 25%, energy is up 30%, partly thanks to a carbon tax. And keep in mind, sales tax in most Canadian provinces is 13 to 15% on everything you buy. And the Tea Party was blown out by what, 2, 3%? What changed? Justin Trudeau. Specifically, his campaign to convert Canada from a mixed economy like the United States into a government-dominated economy like the sick men of the European Union. Under Trudeau, business investment has plunged by a third, while government spending nearly doubled to almost half of GDP. Government workers in Canada are growing almost four times faster than the private sector, and one in three Canadians now work for the government, raking in 30% more in salary and benefits than the taxpayers they lured over. Another 1.7 million Canadians, roughly 1 in 10 households, are on welfare. Of course, that makes it very difficult to win an election in Canada on a small governmental platform. You're up against the government-provided livelihoods of 40% of the voters, meaning you've got to win the 80% of everybody else. And this is the same dynamic I told you about without this pressure. When you want to change status quo, late friend of mine explained to me how that works. He did the analysis. You have to muster 68% of the voters in a general election in order to overcome status quo. You're seeing now what everybody goes on, and that part of it was because of the government. You're overcoming the government employee, and they want to keep status quo. You're seeing now most people in Canada are in that status, it takes 80%, not 68%, but 80%. Everybody in 80% has to vote against the status quo, or it doesn't, it just stays there, stays where it's at. As we can see in this article, go down to the commenter, Stefan put it, as I live in the United Soviet Socialist Republic of Kanukistan, this article reflects the reality of what I see around me. The road to serfdom is alive and well in Canada. Malthusian deindustrialization and techno-serfdom are works that continue to progress in Trudeau-utopia. And I found that fascinating. As we're getting into Trump mania. So, sorry to hear that for Canada, but to move? See, this is where I find it interesting. You skedaddle, and you just leave everything behind. Maybe it's a place to leave behind, I don't know. But that's a lot of people to have to consider that things are so bad, it'd be better to move to a place they may not be understanding. I'm not hearing it's much better in lots of other places. I do hear Russia is doing better, but they're like crawling out of the weeds as well. And they're already ahead of this Trudeau-utopia. They're already into the sustainable development, the digital currency. I talked to you about this. You're not going there to move to a better place necessarily that's avoiding all this. They're just making it a lot harder to see it, more transparent to everybody. And there's a population back there that's conducive to it. As I see, populations are conducive to every sort of nonsense, it seems. People do not want to keep their own republic, it seems. And I don't know why that is. And that's been made me the main shocker for me. People will like to hear information, but they don't want to do anything with it or buy it. And I say that in generality. There's some people that are swinging hard for the fences. It's still not enough. When you see the applesauce that came out of the U.S. Knesset for a psychopath, a genocidal psychopath, on a lie, on a fraud. And as we hear someone else in the world, another 15 or 16 people looking in and saying, you're criminals, you can't, we got to arrest it. The duty is on the world to arrest these criminals. We're in a really bad way in this world. It seems the best we can do is decide to move, and I'm wondering, where do you move to? And this is not a new question for me. When I started to realize what was going on, and well, okay, we came from England, they say, and we were supposed to separate from England, they told us, and we were supposed to live in the land of the free, home of the brave, they said, and we moved out west, young man, and then I come out west, and I see westward, Star of Empire takes his way, and I look at the coast on the west, where do you go from here? Then you got to turn around. Whether it's good to move or not, I don't really know. I guess if you're capable, see the world. I wish I would have seen the world, and I didn't. But at this point, I'm looking and saying, where in the world do you go? Actually. We see uprising. We see resistance. We see the Palestinian resistance in people everywhere, it seems now. And yet the entrenched governments, the Trudeau governments of the world, are still having their way with us. And so that point where's the point when you say you have no remedy, you have no law, and therefore their authority doesn't exist? And you have to do that in mass because they'll call you an extremist terrorist. Now, they've got the language. You did. They kept the language too. You didn't keep the republic. They took the language. And by that, they win. And yet, the law is there to be enforced. And when you get a judiciary that will back you up, even though there shouldn't have to need to be that, like I've said. The law is there. It's not international. It's not the ICJ discussion opinion. They're backing it up. The law was there before. It's just not being recognized is our problem. The law's right. The principles are right. They're not being dutifully enforced. No different than in the United States. The Supreme Court comes out finally to take away Chevron deference. That was being used by special interests to destroy this country. In this case, a lot of it was environmentalism, but it's actually sustainable development and that ESG nonsense that they now confined onto three letters, which is an entire setup of destruction. And what are they doing there? They're taking away and destroying and interfering with the very same thing the ICJ just said you're not supposed to do, is interfere with someone's productive lands and their production. What I've been saying forever. So where do you go? Do you keep moving, like try to keep the moss off your shoes or something? Or do you have to decide, wait a minute, I'm going to keep, once they got me moving, I'm moving. I'm homeless. I am the people that are now being whisked into wherever, who knows where, in San Francisco, in California, in Grants Pass, made criminals, you get moving. I don't know what the answer is for any one of us. I do know your society starts moving, or you become migrants in your own country, or you migrate to another country, now you become, what, that new immigrant, and a whole bunch of new demands. It doesn't seem to be the most efficient answer, but it is what the future that they want. And why they cause immigration, and why they destabilize places. Partly what you're seeing here in Kanukistan. Partly what the big issue about the open borders thing and the lack of naturalization processes that are going on. You're seeing why there's a cell wall, as I've discussed it as well. I thought this was fascinating, the punchline. Y'all in Kanukistan are willing to move. 42% of you willing to move instead of standing your ground. And I'm not judging that. I don't know what your answer is there. But you have to look and see the causes. You have to understand someone got you there. May or may not have been able to avoid it. And yet there may be some steps that you need to take. And that's going to take a focus on a unified focus. But it's a non-dependent focus for each one of you that then sees the common need. That's the mutual help that needs to come, that I don't really see happening at all. I believe it's going to need to be required. But the worst decline in 40 years, well, that's interesting. It didn't happen before. But it happens routinely. And you can find why the causes of those if you just read a little bit and find out what it is. And what it seems to be is we abandon as people, we consent ourselves away from principle and foundation. Then we allow others around us to take the race of lawyers to take our laws, take our rights. And I don't mean that, again, your opinion of what's right is the law. Sometimes we have funny ideas about what the law is. As I've said, you can see pretty clearly what the writing is. We have a lot of ideas that we impose upon that I think I've seen are improper on our part. But absolutely improper when you watch that someone that doesn't have it, say, as simple as why I reduce it down to jurisdiction. If a court does not have jurisdiction, why are we listening to them? If a law has no remedy, then it's not a law. Why are we looking at it as a law? Why is it being deemed a law? Why was it equity standing there to invalidate it? And that's in these courts. And when that didn't happen, where are the people to say, you're not actually a court then? These are very profound problems. I don't really know all the answers. I do know, without a foundational basis, when we get down to Kanukistan, 40% wants to leave, 42% want to move. You have no economic basis. You allowed it to slip away somehow. And I guess you can move on, and I guess maybe there's a practicality about some of that. But as you watch an influx from everywhere else into these so-called Western societies, these civilizations, you see, it doesn't do any good. This is a reverse replacement. They send in policies that are no good. They get you to move out, and you abandon your countries from governments that are not really yours. They look like they're yours, but they're imposing laws and rules that are not conducive to actually support the people at all. They're like, oh, let's support the homeless by assisting them out of here. And we don't ever look to say we had an obligation and duty, like the ICJ said over Israel. And I don't agree with this because Israel shouldn't be there at all. But that they are there relative to the ICJ, Israel, if it was our state, had the obligation to take care of the problems that they're causing. Again, it's an offshoot of taxation, which is extortion. The problems that are caused by someone are born in some measure by those people causing the problem. That's what taxation is. What we don't understand is they cause everything to be a problem that we cause, that we have to be taxed. That's what the sustainable development does. And then it's our responsibility to some third-party obligation relative to that on top of it. A further divorce of our own nature, if you will. We never get to our own land. We always talk about conceptualizations that are controlled by somebody else. And if you complain, like any plantation, you're going to suffer the consequence. And that's why I say you got to be careful on how you understand what's going on. And I would hope the law and one party should be enough. And I say that so far the experience is it is enough, but it doesn't cause a win, but it doesn't neutralize the oppressor. So the more people that come to bring the law, the objective basis, the better it is. Getting back to this Chevron deference, a colleague of mine was able to get a document that he wrote up. By taking away everything that was being put on to public land management, that was urbanization, the sustainability nonsense, by being able to sweep it away from a possibility, we're able now to get right to the law that we've been advocating for over a decade. Clearly, black and white, simple to understand, sustained yield of the forest for production is now directly accessible because the Supreme Court stopped doing stupid stuff and illegal things for 40 years, allowing the Chevron deference, agency deference to rule. The black and white now becomes important. And being able to state that clearly and then hold that against somebody who has for a decade been oppressing people generally relative to forest management and production. And they list all the productive capacities, including recreation, which is actually a lesser aesthetic, but mining and agriculture and ranching, all those are now paramount, as they should have been, as they never should have been abandoned, as we shouldn't have allowed to be abandoned, as the courts are now exposed for their trust breach. They'll never accept this. But that's what's gone on. Our understanding of that is what's important. Why I say that ICJ opinion, that writing, those findings are very important. They're not irrelevant. What it's irrelevant to is you look in there and see there's a duty to stop the crimes and no one's stopping them. Doesn't mean that no one's trying. It means that they're not stopping them. No different than Jefferson Mining District. We did our best. We called this all out. I'm almost smiling now watching someone take this new release that was back to the law, the strict interpretation of the law as well. It's nice and simple. And now apply it. And diplomatically go back and say, here, this is the way it really supposed to work. Notwithstanding your training, notwithstanding your bias, your systemic bias, notwithstanding your outcomes, notwithstanding allowing a third party to have influence over something they have no right to, you have to look here first. And this third party influence, if it has a right, has to bring its right, and then we consider it. But first, we bring ourselves into production, and that can mean at lots of levels, even the monetary and fiscal. And this is the other underlying problem. The fiscal laws and acts for appropriating money have to cease. Getting back to Professor St. Ange, the economist, his comment in one of the last discussions he had, the fiscal appropriation has to be cut by $2 trillion. And he says it's not likely. And that's likely, not likely. However, the people have to speak up. Otherwise, we all become the homeless. We become worse than that. We become migrant homeless. At some point, the societies can't keep up paying for the upkeep of all this. And you're hearing all how quickly that destroys places. Because it's not natural. And so, 42%, this is an idea, 42% willing, thinking to move because the economy and the policies have gotten so bad is an astonishing number alone. But to understand what that starts to happen, the dynamic that sets up, that is what is planned for, to have you do, is another thing that's astonishing, that they now get you in a place that you can never settle. And places that are supposed to be rule of law, so-called, places of law, that's the prime directive, is settlement. As I keep telling you, land disposal is to settlement, and settlement, quiet, is peace. And that's what the sheriff keeps. He keeps the peace. He keeps the settlement. So when you're looking out, you notice him when you see him. 42% of you in Kanukistan thinking you have to move is not peaceful. You're in war, and you're not responding to the war. You're responding to your needs in the war. You're going to move away from the war. And that's exactly what they're waiting for. Like I said, these problems are pretty profound. I don't know what all the answers are, but it does start with each one of us, as best as we can. I'm looking at that right now. I've got someone who's violated me, abusing me, and I'm holding on as best as I can. I'm looking at the street. That's the only other option, unless I can get put through what we had agreed that is there's no agreement, actually. I'm just trying to make right what someone else has made wrong and do it with some dignity and respect and honor within certain principle so that I don't become what we're watching in the world, what the future that they want us to be, because we didn't keep our peace. We didn't keep our settlement. We didn't keep ourselves. We didn't keep our republic. So I hope something today I said think about things, use this foundation, start looking for the parameters of what we might need to do, make lists of things that you can handle, and then anything that becomes a problem you might be able to use to confront and stop it and neutralize it at least while others are coming. It's going to take a long time. Hopefully these matters of the world are bringing our focus. We are gaining speed on what needs to be focused on, and that's going to hopefully give us an opportunity to help ourselves wherever these problems are. This has been BTW RLM 587. I'll be with you next week. Tech Diffs or Nature Willing.
Echoes call the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, fierce and free. Pull up a chair, lean in close, lessons to learn. Dose by dose. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned. House words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. Law to liberty, the spectrum line in house court, no place to hide. A can of wood bass, ready to burst for unspoken truths and unquenchable thirst. Behind the woodshed. No stone unturned, house words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. So mark the time when Sunday comes. Behind the woodshed, beating drums. House voice, a beacon, fierce and bold. In the fight for truth. Next week, heed the call. Behind the woodshed, standing tall.